Welcome to the EmpoweredPatientPodcast.com show. I'm Karen Jagoda. My guest today is Joe Tucker. He's the CEO of Enveric Biosciences, Enveric.com, and the topic today is the use of neuroplastogen therapies for the treatment of neuropsychiatric disorders. So, Joe, I want to welcome you to the show, and I appreciate you taking a few minutes to be with us.
Well, Karen, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here. I always love to talk with informed people and to try to help educate the patient. So this is a great opportunity for me to be here as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Tell us, what are neuroplastogen therapies?
Well, it's a new class of molecules. It's really only been talked about for a few years. And to take a lot of complicated science and distill it, it's really the concept is manually, physically, by having your own pharmaceutical that you can administer to a patient, you can stimulate the existing brain architecture to become neuroplastic. What that really means is to create new activities, new connections. Plasticity actually means to be modifiable. So it's a way of modifying your brain, but doing it actually under controlled situations where you take a drug, you know it's going to modify certain regions of the brain, you know how it's going to do it, and it allows you to essentially rewire your brain.
Tell us which mental health disorders might be best suited for this kind of therapy.
Well, what we are focusing on in Enveric, and I think other scientists in the field see this as well, is in particular in the areas of depression, particularly in the areas of, and so that would include things like treatment-resistant depression or major depressive disorder. You're looking at anxiety indications, which are similar, but in some ways a little bit inverse of depressions. Anxieties such as generalized anxiety, social anxiety, those types of things. And then even PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. All of these involve, say, atypical or somewhat modified from the norm in terms of control of one system in the brain over another. The normal level of communication between the regions of the brain has changed, and it's an opportunity to go in and essentially reset it, get it back to where the normal brain is operating, and then we end up with, you know, a reduction or relief of symptoms.
You are basically talking about psilocybin-based therapies, and we'll get a little bit more into how you come about those drugs, but you've also developed a library portfolio of candidates. So tell us about how you developed that portfolio and the kinds of candidates that you've discovered.
Sure. So this whole neuroplastogen space was really recently discovered, and it was discovered through academic research that were looking at the effects of these agents we call psychedelics, psilocybin being the active ingredient in magic mushrooms and a very well-known psychedelic agent. And it was in looking at psilocybin and other molecules known to be psychedelic agents like ayahuasca and LSD and others that scientists have realized that what's going on is you're activating a particular receptor in the brain, something called the serotonin 5-HT2A receptor. And so we at Enveric thought this was a great opportunity because of some of the early work that others had done in using the actual magic mushroom. We thought, boy, you know, if we can make a molecule that looks very similar to the magic mushroom molecule, the psilocybin, perhaps it'll work in a very similar way, but we can even modify it, make it better. It's all for the side effects or the downsides to using magic mushrooms as a way of attempting to treat mental health. So we created the Cybrary. The Cybrary is, as you said, more than 1,000 new compounds, new chemicals that we created that were inspired by. They're structurally similar to psilocybin, the ingredient. By doing that, they bind to the receptor, the serotonin 5-HT2A receptor, but in a slightly different way. And that has allowed us to create this, you know, very interesting resource from which we've been able to mine very interesting new compounds, new pharmaceutical candidates that we are looking to take forward into patients as this new way of treating mental health, even better than using psilocybin.
And just to be clear, you used machine learning AI to assist you in the development of that portfolio?
Yeah, that's right. It was really a really interesting, you know, scientifically elegant project in which we combined three different things to arrive at this pool. You know, it became a very interesting Venn diagram, if you will, where we used artificial intelligence to deduce, because, you know, this is not known. This is a whole new area of research and of science. It is not known what shape of a molecule will induce a hallucination versus not inducing a hallucination, for example, and what shape will strongly induce the neuroplasticity that we're looking for so that the brain can essentially be repaired versus won't induce it. So we had to develop our own internal artificial intelligence tool that was trained by the other molecules that had been designed previously or were naturally occurring. And then we continued to train it as we made our 1,000 molecules and got our AI operating more and more intelligently, if you will. We combined that along with traditional chemistry that Big Pharma uses to create new drug candidates. And we use a very interesting technology called synthetic biology, in which we essentially figured out how the mushrooms themselves had made psilocybin and other psychedelic agents. And we took those tools out of the original mushroom or out of the original plant and used that in a laboratory context to create these molecules. So it was really, really interesting, three different technologies coming together in a very innovative way to create these completely new compounds that, again, we made more than 1,000 of them so that we would have all kinds of opportunities to find different and exciting new drug candidates.
And you managed to figure out your lead candidate, EB-003. So tell us why you picked that particular compound over all the other ones.
Sure. So we've had a lot of interesting conversations, as you might imagine, with patients, with mental health care practitioners, and also with big pharma companies. And what we've come to realize is, as exciting as the idea of a psychedelic agent and to go into a sort of, a psychedelic experience, if you will, couple that with some therapy and have the benefit to the mental health patient, what's even more likely to have a positive impact on society and on patients and get to a much greater number of patients and provide greater benefits is if we can take away the biggest drawback, the drawback that's so big it's the elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about, which is the hallucination experience itself. That hallucination is a big, big, big safety issue. So we charted a course that I think is very, very innovative. Very few people are even willing, very few companies are even willing to say this. That, you know what, that hallucination is not necessarily how this works. It's neuroplasticity. So we needed to eliminate that, view it as a safety issue. So we went through our library and we asked a question that very few other people have asked, which is, can you have this big neuroplasticity induction so that the brain self-repairs, but can you do it in a way that does not induce a hallucination? And so that's actually what we set out to do. Take the psychedelic out of psychedelics. Take the hallucination out of psychedelics. And that's what we arrived at. We did a lot of testing to arrive at molecules that appear to have, in fact, that capability.
How do you go about testing those kinds of drugs in clinical trials?
Well, once you get into clinical trials, which of course is humans, the safety issue of the hallucination is a big challenge for those companies that are moving forward and for those molecules that induce hallucinations when you move forward. It's actually a very big challenge because it really skews your data. The patient is a very, first off, you really have to spend a lot of time controlling the setting that the patient is in. They're so sensitive. So many variables can send the patient down one path or another. And it's also well known. Of course, we all know about the placebo effect, which is if a patient believes the drug is going to work and they believe they got the drug, amazingly, very often they do quite well. And whether or not they actually did get the drug, as long as they believe they did, they often do quite well. Placebo effect is very hard to separate in clinical trials of patients who've been given hallucinogenic agents, psychedelic agents that cause hallucinations, because they definitely believe what they definitely know when they got something. It's very clear if you're hallucinating or you're not hallucinating. And so those patients all tend to do well. Whether or not it actually works is still a big question. Now with us, with our lead molecule, the 003, by eliminating the hallucination, we've actually made clinical trials much more easy, much simpler, much less risky, and much less likelihood of being fooled by the placebo effect. It's going to act very much like a classical drug clinical trial where your placebo actually works and you can actually tell the difference between whether or not the patient is being helped.
And this drug would be administered as in a pill form?
Yes. We look at 003 as quite different from the rest of, let's say, the typical psychedelic drug. So the typical psychedelic drug being pursued for mental health is currently imagined that what you will do is you'll go in and have two or three or four sessions. Each session might be a week apart, and you'll take this drug that will cause you to have these massive hallucinations, and you'll be lying there in a controlled setting in a room for 8 to 10 hours with some healthcare workers around you. And then you won't take the drug anymore after those four sessions, and hopefully your mental health challenge will be reduced or alleviated for an extended period of time, a month, 3 months, 6 months, something like that. We think that with this non-hallucinogenic molecule, you can actually treat the patient in a very different way, and in fact, a much more traditional and accepted way. And that is, this is, can be a drug that you take regularly. You take it as a maintenance dose. Maybe you take it every day. And it's take a pill in the morning or take a pill once every 2 days, and it manages your symptoms by constantly inducing this neuroplasticity, which benefits the patients, with which rewires the brain. And so in that context, a drug that you can take, you know, very, very regularly, chronically, maybe it's every day, it makes a ton of sense to have an orally available drug constantly working to your benefit.
It sounds like that also is a profile of a drug that might not be abused. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, that is a really good point. One of the big safety issues with the psychedelic, the traditional psychedelic drugs that are being pursued is, in fact, abuse potential. This potent hallucination effect that they have, well, heck, the reason we all know about psychedelic agents is because they've been abused for 50 years or longer. They've certainly been in use by indigenous cultures for thousands of years, but they've been definitely abused. They've been recreational drugs for 50 years, for sure. So there's not any question whether or not a hallucinogenic drug has abuse potential. It's clearly that's its number one potential. So when you've taken that away, as we're talking about, when you eliminate the hallucination, you make it so that no matter how high a dose you take, you don't have a hallucination. Well, you've really taken away the reason to abuse this drug. You don't get high off it. You don't see things. You don't experience anything other than a reduction in your symptoms of depression, a reduction in your anxiety, a reduction in your PTSD. So I would say if you're taking that the way it should and it works, you're not going to want to abuse it. You're going to want to take it, but you're not going to want to abuse it. There'd be no benefit to you to taking it in any other context or in any other dosage form.
And could you see this drug being used by people who are relatively healthy but want to maintain the health of their brain, or might even want to be smarter or happier or more engaged somehow?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question. because we have yet to really fully test this. I mean, we're not yet into humans. But when you look at what's going on, the mechanism of activity, the neuroplasticity, the rewiring of the brain, bringing the brain into its more normal, healthy state, it does make you wonder, what if you're not really that severe? Will it actually, you know, increase your, not even sure what the word is, engagement, happiness? Who knows? I'm certainly interested to see where that will go. I don't think that you're going to see prescriptions for, I'd like to outperform. I'd like to be smarter than my neighbor, but gosh, what an interesting concept that would be. I definitely think though, with the lack of hallucination and how, you know, we're designing this to be safe, something that you can take chronically, that you may well find that, unlike in the cases of the hallucination inducing psychedelic drugs being tested, that this is a drug that you would get to more than just extreme cases, people that are treatment resistant, people that are, you know, suicide ideation, but in fact, people with more general anxiety or lesser symptoms may well say, you know, I feel safe with this. I'm not worried this is going to induce greater, you know, anxiety or feelings on my part that I'm trying to solve. And so I could see it being much more widely used than, you know, a hallucination-inducing mental health treatment.
Well, last question before we run out of time. Is part of the process that you're engaged in right now both educating doctors as well as getting more money for research so that it can make a more compelling case and you can figure out how to help more people?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a very important part of all new drug development, discovery and development companies. If you truly are in a new area, leading a new discovery of a new paradigm, it's incumbent upon you, it's a requirement, I think, almost a public service to explain how this works and to actually involve thought leaders, key opinion leaders in the scientific field, in the medical field, and ask them to come and test your drugs on patients, to explore how it works, to explore even in their labs, so that the whole world gets a much better understanding of exactly what's going on. How does this work? Is it really beneficial? And if the drug really is a great benefit to society, it will become very clear. Everybody will be excited about it and be able to use it. So I think that's a very important part of what all drug development companies should do. And of course, that's important to us too. At the end of the day, what we're trying to do, the reason we're all here is because everybody is really passionate about coming up with a new way to treat these mental health disorders, which are such an epidemic in our society. And that only works if the drug actually works. We don't want something that's a placebo effect. We want something that's actually working. So you get all the scientists that you can possibly get, the doctors involved, get them to test it, and they'll, if it works, they'll become your greatest champions. They'll be telling the world how great it is. And then we all benefit. So that's, you know, I'm glad you brought that up. That's really part of the ethos of Vendveric. We think that we are here to try to help society. That's why we're here. And if we're not doing that, then we're wasting our time.
Thanks to my guest today, Joe Tucker, CEO of Vendveric Biosciences, Vendveric.com. I'm Karen Jagoda, and you've been listening to the Empowered Patient Podcast.com show. Like us on Facebook at Empowered Patient Radio. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.